You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast, episode number 120. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. Sorry about the voice. A little bit under the weather this week. Woke up on Monday with a sore throat and trying to fight through it this week. But I can't promise that it'll hold up, so we'll just go as long as we can and see where it lands us. Joining me, as always, Mainland writer David Rowe. Dave, how you doing up in Tallahassee this week?
I was a little disappointed to hear you were sick. I mean, trying to one-up me after I crack a rib. I mean, really, man? Jeez. I mean, I know we're podcasters, but did you have to go get a sore throat?
Well, I don't think that a sore throat trumps a cracked rib. I certainly would rather have the sore throat than the cracked rib.
All right, fair enough.
But I would rather have neither of those things, if truth be told. So, we will probably not go to the great lengths that we normally go to on this podcast. And it's silly because every time I say that, we end up having a longer podcast than I expected. But, Dave, let's start out by talking about Orlando City against the Portland Timbers and a game that featured virtually no action.
Well, at least not for the first little while.
What really struck me about this game, Dave, is that the problem with Orlando City this season has been slow starts. But I felt like Orlando actually didn't start slowly in this one. I thought that they played very up-tempo at the beginning of the match. They created some chances. They earned a corner kick in the first minute. They had an opportunity, I believe, just after the clock changed into the second minute to score the first goal with Lamine Sané heading just wide off a corner. And you know, really, it seemed like Orlando was on the front foot until the penalty, the foul in the box on Mohamed El Mounir, and just unfortunate. He had Sané behind him to provide coverage. Didn't need to dive in with that challenge. Got that one wrong by about a split second, and in fact, it was originally called a dive and a second yellow early on one of Portland's best players, Sebastian Blanco. But video review overturned that and made a penalty there, and Diego Valeri puts Portland up 1-0 with his second penalty goal against Orlando City in the last two meetings.
Well, and rightly so on overturning it. I mean, it's upon review, it was, you know, it was obviously not a dive. And so it's one of those things where, you know, it's against you. You hate that it happens, and you know the initial call. You're like, okay, great, but then you know in the back of your mind, you're going, I'm not so sure about that. You know, the other thing, Joe actually guessed right. You know, he went to the correct side, missed it, you know, by a hand's width. But that's how penalty kicks go sometimes. So, you know, it was definitely a momentum changer, and I think it may have gotten in their heads for a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that the Lions spent about the next 10 or 12 minutes really discombobulated, trying to regain their rhythm. I think it shook them a little bit. I asked Jason Kreis about that after the game, about, you know, what goes through your mind as a player when that happens, and you're all over a team, and then something happens against the run of play, and then boom, you're behind. And, you know, and he kind of turned it around and said, you know, that's kind of the way it's been for this team, is that you give up a goal early and you just kind of think, here we go again, we're playing from behind again. And you know, luckily this is a team that has been able to earn some points from losing positions. So with a lot of game to play, they were able to shake it off and regain their rhythm. I thought that they finished the first half maybe better than they even started it. Certainly there were some opportunities late. Kleshchen passed up a shot in a good position to try to make one extra pass for the tap-in. That didn't quite thread its way through. You had Justin Merrim on a corner, you know, with Spector flicking the ball to the back post, and Merrim just getting absolutely robbed by Jake Gleason. So there were some really quality opportunities late in that first half, and just a little bit unlucky not to equalize before the halftime break.
Which has been, unfortunately, typical so far this year of you know, shots that normally you would think would be goals and otherwise, you know, not necessarily bad goalkeepers, but, you know, some excellent saves being made against Orlando on a shot that you surely think is going in. And just once again, like you said, it seems to be the, oh, here we go again. You know, we've gotten to the half and we're down and well, shoot, you know, this is what do we do now?
Yeah. And, you know, for all of the good things that the Lions did out of the gate to start the game, they came out of the second half. They came out for the second half quite flat, and really kind of fortunate that Portland was not able to take its chances in the opening minutes of that half. There were a few opportunities there for Blanco and Valeri that went off the woodwork, another shot that was blocked in the box, and, you know, just a couple of really great opportunities that weren't there in the first half, but they were there in the second half early. And, you know, Orlando City to me looked like they came out a little flat in the second half. Again, maybe owing to that, you know, uphill climb that they were facing once again, and all of the good opportunities that did not go in. And, you know, instead of just relaxing and saying one of these is going to eventually go in, they kind of came out a little bit more tentative, gave up some opportunities early, but then they sort of came back into the game through the middle part of the second half. But the problem was that things started to break down. You're still seeing some uncertainty with Justin Merrim and Sasha Kleshchen, where the other one's going to go, where do they want the ball? And you can even include Coleman and Yotun in there. It's like, where is my new teammate going to go? Where does he want the ball? How do I have to play this? And, you know, there were a few times when they weren't even sure the ball was being played to them, and they kind of stood there and let a Portland player come in and take it. And but even so, there still were some opportunities. Before the second Portland goal, there was a free kick from the left that Kleshchen, I don't know, he must have missed that by, I don't know, 6 inches to a foot at the far post.
Yeah. So
there were still some opportunities, just not quite sharp enough, and weren't getting as many attempts on target as they did the week before against Red Bulls. And then, you know, that gets undone on another set piece, and this time it looked like some zonal marking, and it looked like they had been doing some man marking in the past this season, and maybe as a result of giving up that set piece goal to Aaron Long, they look like they might have changed things up just a bit on how they did it, and it still didn't help, because Tuoloma scored, made it 2-0, and then you're thinking, well, this is not good, and this is probably going to have the Kreis out birds singing in full force and full song after the game. But no, Dave, it didn't take till after the game. They were calling for his head in the middle of the game. Yeah, and it was like, you know, and I'm just sitting here thinking, it's like, you know, Jason Kreis didn't tell Mohamed El-Mounir to foul a guy in the box. He didn't tell Justin Merrim to to keep his shot up where Gleason could get a hand on it. This is not a coaching issue in my estimation. It's again one of those things where you look at it and you go, I've watched this game. It doesn't seem like Portland's winning this game. And you look at the chances and the shots, the chances created, the shots, the corner kicks, the possession, the passing accuracy, and you're just tearing them up in every category, but you're just not getting the ball in the net. And I have a hard time pinning that on the coach. I really do. Of course, I've been called a Jason Kreis apologist, but I'm not. I'm just a patient guy who is waiting till the end of April to see where the team is and if anything needs to change. One thing we can say is that nobody can complain about the diamond not working because the diamond was not in effect on Sunday. It was a 4-2-3-1, and probably largely because Portland plays a similar pressing style to New York Red Bulls. And, you know, the second half of that game, the 4-2-3-1 did very well. So they figured, why not just come back to it? And, you know, for the most part, other than not scoring goals, it worked.
Well, they won't complain about the 4-4-2 diamond not working, but they'll point to the fact that we didn't use it and we, you know, won. So that's what'll happen.
Well, they very well could point to that and use that. But for 80 minutes, that wasn't the case.
No, it was not.
So anyway, it did look like some legs started to get a little heavy. Some guys weren't moving quite as good. Maybe the 2-0 scoreline was affecting, you know, work rate or effort maybe a little bit. But then the subs started happening, and you got R.J. Allen on the field for Scott Sutter, and then you've got Chris Mueller on the field for Josue Coleman, who's still – we have to remember he's a teenager. He's not going to tear it up every game. So,
right.
I thought he struggled a little bit in the game and was marked out a little bit. And I thought that, he did some of the same things he did against New York in terms of flicking the ball, you know, with a fancy heel flick to nobody in particular, just trying to, you know, demonstrate some skills and maybe being more hopeful than artful in what he's trying to accomplish. And, Mueller came on, and you could tell right away that Chris Mueller just brought a different energy to the team. And then Stefano Pino came on, and, you know, all of a sudden you had all your strikers on the field at the same time. Numbers were getting forward, and you could sense that Portland was just hanging on for dear life. And just a near miss for Mueller, and then 2 minutes later he scores his first MLS goal with a header and makes it 2-1.
Indeed, and the one that he missed was a pretty good screamer that it didn't miss by much. And you're right about his energy. He's obviously one of those guys. Just the look on his face, the determination, he's got a fire inside, however you want to put it. But when he's out there, he's full steam ahead all the time, yelling, and just you can see the joy of him playing. Mm-hmm. And at that point in the match, that's going to be refreshing for the other guys out there. If you got somebody that comes out and says, come on, let's go, let's go, let's go. And that's what he brought to the field. Then you add Pino in there. And like you said, you've got all three strikers. Well, of course you do. I mean, that's what a good coach is going to do is, okay, well, we're down two. Let's get some goals. How am I going to do that? I'm going to put more offense in. So he did. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Mueller getting up. I'm so glad that Mueller got his head on that ball and put it in because I know I said before that I think once he gets that first one, he'll start opening up and we'll get some more goals out of him. So there you go. There's the first one. And he almost, like you said, he almost had the first one, you know, 2 minutes before that. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, you climb back 2-1 and, you know, there's still 8 minutes left and you know, whatever stoppage there's going to be, and you're like, all right, well, you know, hey, that's good. Maybe we can get another one.
Yeah, I mean, with that much time left and a little bit of momentum, the crowd was really up and raucous and really making the whole building shake. And it was, you know, you could sense that there was an opportunity there. You just had to make sure that you scored a goal before you gave up one on the other end, you know, on a counter attack. And The only thing about Mueller that I like is that he seems mature beyond his rookie status. He really seems to have a really solid head on his shoulders, and when you talk to him, you can't help but be impressed with him. Just a real polished guy, and I think that he will, of course he'll have his rookie ups and downs, but I think he'll, he's got the makings of a good player in this league, and it'll be interesting to see how his career develops. But just 2 minutes after he scored, Dom Dwyer, he scores when he wants and he draws penalties when he wants. And he must have wanted to right then because he drew one. Because Alvis Powell knocks him down in the box, a foul that Merritt Paulson didn't like very much, and Portland fans didn't like very much.
Yeah, Portland fans definitely didn't like it.
It's one of those that if it goes against your team, you're going to hate it, and if it goes the other way, you're not going to hate it, and you're going to point out the fact that yeah, he did cut off Dom's run, and even though two other times in the game, a Portland player did that to an Orlando City player, and it wasn't called. It still looks like a foul to me. And Dwyer was trying to get on the end of a cross from that man, Chris Mueller, and he has no business going backwards after contact when he's trying to score the equalizer. So I think it was legit, and the shoulder was definitely lowered into Dom, and he didn't go shoulder to shoulder. He got in front of the shoulder and kind of put the shoulder in his chest. And I don't have a problem with the penalty, but I'm sure I would if I was a Portland fan. And Kleshchen stepped up, sent the keeper the wrong way, and nailed it.
Yeah, and suddenly we're 2-2, and of course now the wall is going absolutely nuts. But it's and you're starting to think to yourself, all right, here's the cardiac cats again, and managed to come back in the last 10 minutes of a match. We're 2-2. We've salvaged the game. But even at that point, you're thinking to yourself, we've got all the momentum, and if you're Portland and you had been sitting back hoping to get out of there with a 3 points on a 2-0, and then now you're sitting there now as Portland, you're thinking, okay, well, we're on the road, let's get out of here with a draw. So I don't, maybe should have changed tactics, but I mean, how much can you do that in the last couple minutes anyway? Good on Sasha for stepping up and doing what a vet's supposed to do and just burying it in the back of the net to get that penalty kick. And yeah, like you said, Dom draws fouls when he wants, and evidently he scores when he wants too.
He does, and I have to say that you hit the nail on the head. They were definitely playing for the points. They were trying to slow the game down. I mean, Gleason got a time-wasting yellow card in, I think, the 77th minute. And then, after the tie goal, it was certainly the crowd energy fed Orlando City. And in the 64th, Dwyer had an opportunity to try to get onto a Kleshchen cross. He just missed it by a few inches. And then, about a minute later, there was a stoppage in play, two Portland players down, and you could see Dwyer out on the pitch just yelling at his teammates and just exhorting them on and encouraging them. And lo and behold, he gets in behind in the 87th minute, and he loses the ball behind him, goes to ground, and it's like, oh man, another one of these chances is going to waste. And he gets up, spins around, switches it to his right foot, scores the winning goal. Just an insane play by Dom Dwyer.
Yeah, it was. I've rewatched it many, many times, and each time I'm amazed. It's like you said, it goes to ground, recovers. There's two defenders in between him and the goal and the goalie. Just kind of, and it wasn't beautiful in any respect other than the fact that we loved it. It wasn't slick, but it was exactly Dom Dwyer, and it was, muscle it in there. I'm going to do whatever I have to do, put the ball in the back of the net. And he does. And then, I mean, you want to talk, the stadium is already rocking, and then that happens, and you go up 3-2. Of course, Dom heads the sideline. Mueller follows him and decides to do the slide into infinity, which he eventually made it back to the pile. But I wish we could have actually seen the rest of that knee slide, because it looked impressive.
Yeah, and now you're thinking, oh, did we score too early?
Right.
Because just a minute or so later, Dairon Asprilla gets in behind a little bit, He's got a tough angle, but still a pretty good look at goal, but he shot it right at Bednick. Bednick made the save, and then it was just a matter of seeing it out, and Orlando City gets back-to-back wins for the first time and improves to 3-1 all-time against Portland in MLS play, and it's all of a sudden the Lions are above the playoff line.
And which is, you know, we're obviously where we want to be, but once again, it's early.
Yeah.
So, okay, we're above the playoff line, but it's early. There's still so many games to play. So just like, you know, we didn't get to, you know, uppity 2 games ago, you know, when we hadn't won a match yet. Well, okay, we've won 2 in a row. That's great. There's going to be times where we win a couple in a row and times where we might drop a couple in a row. So, you know, I'm more excited at that. The same thing that I've noticed all season is that the team doesn't give up. You know, and the guys that are coming off the bench are making a difference. So those are two excellent things for a team that's trying to advance.
Yeah, one of the things that that came to mind for me is a line from Bull Durham that Tim Robbins gave. And it's, you know, he said, "I love winning." You know what I mean? It's like better than losing. And yeah, that's how I looked at it. And yes, Jason Kreis and even the players said, look, this wasn't a pretty game. We should have had more goals. We shouldn't have got behind like that. That shouldn't have happened. We've got to be more clinical. We've got to work on some things. And yet, you know, you look at you go right down the list and you go shots, you know, chances created, passing, possession, all in Orlando's favor. I think corners were like 12-1. It was ridiculous.
Right.
That's a team getting forward against a team that's not getting forward. And yes, that may have been part of Portland's MO, but they are a pressing team, and they certainly, you know, with the early lead, probably didn't have to press as much, especially when they went up 2-0. But you know, it was a game that Orlando controlled, you know, quite a bit of it, even if they didn't have the lead. And that's really, to me, the important thing. The goals. There's going to be games that you dominate and you don't win because that's soccer. I mean, we've all seen games like that where you just can't buy one and, you know, a goalkeeper stands on his head. But you want to do those things where you're getting more shots than the opposition. You're passing better than the opposition. You're possessing the ball better than the opposition. You're generating more chances. These are all good things. And then all of that other stuff that's related to chemistry, that will all come as the season goes on. Or at least certainly that's the hope.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, one of the things that we talked about, you know, over the offseason was adding so many players, getting some of that depth, and that's showing. When you're able to bring, you know, young guys like, you know, Pino and Mueller off of the bench and have them, you know, create – I mean, Mueller got his head on that, but Pino was in there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of them.
You know, I mean – Right. I mean, if it had missed Mueller's head, Pino was right behind him, so or right in front of him. So it's, you know, those guys were they were out there creating. I remember Pino on the left side, you know, getting some crosses in. So it's that's extremely positive. And then to have, you know, a guy like Dom out there just exhorting his teammates on that late in the game. That's what you're wanting from a player like him.
Yeah, you got a veteran out there with, you know, showing the Muellers and the Pinos and the Colemans, you know, even though he was off at that point. This is how we're doing this. We're gonna go on and win this game. We're not gonna take the 1 point. And I think a lot of us would have taken that 1 point at
that point. I would have
82 or 83 minute mark. We'd have been like, okay, cool, we came back,
absolutely,
and got a point. But no, they were not satisfied with that, and that's great. Pino was one of those players I mentioned earlier that got, you know, got the shoulder and even a little bit of elbow in the chest and was cut off and didn't get the call earlier. And it was outside the box. And Coleman was the other one on the right side of the box. And neither of those was a penalty, but they should have been free kicks in pretty good spots. And they weren't called. So it was pretty surprising that you know, Orlando City got the call. But, you know, when a referee has given a penalty one way, you can't do things like what Alvis Powell did. You can't do that. I mean, there's, with his size, there's no reason to go into Dom Dwyer that hard. And it all worked out. So, you know what? Baldomero Toledo, if you remember, is the same referee who called a handball in the 96th minute on Servando Carrasco on a ball that hit him in the front of the chest.
Yep.
So, He owed us one. So that's definitely,
yeah, we were due for that one.
So, Dave, my voice is giving way. So who was your man of the match?
My man of the match was one Mr. Dom Dwyer for creating chances, making his own, drawing the penalty, scoring the game winner, and then just his overall attitude as a leader in that offense all game. So, yeah, it really wasn't a question that Dom was going to get that.
Yeah, I thought Yotun had a pretty good game. I thought Kleshchen played pretty well, but it's hard to knock. It's hard to lift anyone above Dom Dwyer because he really put the team on his back, especially once it got to 2-2. So, Dom, you got the unanimous choice this week. All right, Dave. So, a couple other things to talk about before we get to our guest, if my voice will allow it. International break for the women. Alex Morgan, all she did was score four goals against Mexico in two games. And she was also heavily involved in some of the build-up play on some of the other goals. She pretty much got the hockey assist on the first goal last week in the first matchup. So just tremendous to see that Alex is not only recovered from the concussion, but seems like she has stepped right into form after the injury.
Yeah, no doubt. Like I said, four goals, and she's seeming a bit unstoppable. Hopefully that's going to carry over into the Pride, especially in the next game against Portland. But it's like you say, it's good to see her come back from concussion protocols, not seem to lose a step at all. The other person I want to mention from that match was Megan Rapinoe. She had an outstanding match. Almost everything was fed through her on the offense. She had four assists and a goal of her own. She was all over the place and is, you know, somebody who's a little bit older than a lot of the other ones out there to have the motor that she does and to create those chances. I thought that she played outstanding. And it was really, you know, it was good to see that. I was really hoping that her and Alex were going to connect on that last one because they would have, you know, Alex would have had, you know, the hat trick and she would have tied for the five assists in one match record. So, but alas, it was not to be.
That's all right. It was a 4-1 win and a 6-2 win for the U.S. over Mexico. Never challenged. And we got a rare glimpse of Ashlyn Harris. Yes. In the game in the second meeting when she played about 33 or 34 minutes in the second half, Jill Ellis lost her mind and actually remembered that other goalkeepers were on the squad. So it was nice to see Ashlyn get a few minutes. I don't even know if she faced a shot though.
I don't think she did, but at least she made the pitch, which was great. I actually wrote the recap for that. I remember writing in there that I was like, and then the unthinkable happened. Jill Ellis put in Ashlyn Harris.
Mm-hmm. So good to have Alex coming back in form. Hopefully she'll carry that over and score 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't know, 6 goals against Portland this weekend.
Yeah,
that'd
sure.
be really good. That'd be good. I'd be down for that. Speaking of the Pride at Portland, that's our game this weekend. The Pride are back in action. They're 0-1-1 on this very young season. It doesn't get any easier. The Portland coach Mark Parsons was suspended for this game, and then he was suddenly not suspended for this game.
Sure, because that's how things go for us.
Orlando. That's
Because Orlando.
So they will go out there to the West Coast and play in front of the very large crowd at Providence Park, 6 o'clock Eastern on Sunday, and that's the only game over the 2-day weekend because the Lions play at Philadelphia Friday night, so it's a Friday night game for Orlando City. So fun times. They were one of the last teams to play last weekend, and they'll be one of the first teams to play this weekend in MLS action. Well,
because Orlando.
Let's get my voice a rest.
Yes.
And let's get to our guest this week, and we'll do that right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, we are happy to have with us from the Orlando Pride, Christine Nairn. Christine, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I wanted to start out by asking you just the simplest question, really, and there may not be a simple answer to it, and that is, with as much depth as Tom Sormani has brought into this club, there's still somewhat of a slow start to the season. How is it going to be going to Portland to try to get the offense turned on without the Brazilians and the Australians this weekend?
Yeah, look, first of all, to be Portland's home opener, I mean, it's just something that you kind of like wish for because they have such a great fan base. But with that being said, you know, we haven't had the best start to the season, but that, to be honest, that part of the season doesn't really matter. It's how you finish and how you get better each and every game, and I think that's what we're focusing on. I think Tom said it best was, you know, the first two games were 1/22nd of our season. So we just got to keep chipping away at it and keep getting better and better. And I think, you know, when we played against DC, I think at times we could have put away some chances and really changed the game. But we're not firing on all cylinders yet. But, you know, this game coming up is a new task and a new challenge. And I think, you know, despite missing our Brazilians and our Australians, I think, you know, we'll put the best 11 out there and hopefully come away with some points on the road.
Well, we like that plan. What in particular do you see as a way for you guys to do that, to get those points? What type of either strategy or weaknesses are you guys hoping to take advantage of?
You know, we haven't really talked too much about Portland. I think if we just focus on ourselves and what we're doing and buy into our strategies as a team and what Tom and Connor want us to do out there, I think we'll be all right. But I think the more that you focus on, you know, they have this player or this player, this player, it takes away from what we're trying to do, and we're going to try to implement our style on them. And I think it'll be an exciting game to watch.
Christine, the Pride's fans haven't gotten a lot of opportunities to see you yet. Can you maybe just walk through sort of what fans can expect from your play and what type of players you sort of model your game after a bit?
Yeah, no, I'm really excited, first of all, to play in front of the Orlando fans. I've been on the opposing side, and it is not fun to come to the Orlando Stadium and play, so I'm excited to be on this side of the field this time. So what they can expect from me is just, I think I read somewhere that I'm pretty fiery out there. I kind of let my emotions flow as much as I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And just, I like to dictate the tempo of the game. I like to, you know, sit in there and switch the point of attack and really just, you know, kind of connect everyone. I think that, you know, I just am a very technical player, and, you know, maybe some long range shots. It's been a while since I scored one. So I guess I got to shoot for some pretty long ranges to make sure I can still do it.
Well, Chip, the goalie from the center circle in the preseason.
Yeah. Hopefully I get one that actually counts. So I'm still waiting for it.
Well, we still enjoyed it even if it didn't count. So, you know, just I can only imagine the amount of views that thing had on YouTube or Twitter. So it was quite spectacular. We really enjoyed it. You've now, you know, joined the Pride. You talk about looking forward to playing in front of the crowd here. Is there anybody in particular on the team that, you know, not that you're not a veteran, but that you bonded with or, you know, got close to once you got to Orlando?
I think it's, first of all, been nice because a lot of the former Spirit players are now with the Pride. So that's exciting to kind of be on the same team as all those girls again, you know, with Tony Presley, Ashlyn, Shalina, and Krieger. I think that's really unique and different, but we had something special there, and hopefully we can bring it down to Orlando and kind of get that final piece that all those players have been searching for with a NWSL championship. Just kind of almost rekindling those relationships and getting on the same page and just fighting towards a common goal. I think that, you know, Krieger has been arguably one of the best leaders that I have been a part of and have witnessed, and, you know, obviously got to give her a shout out because she's a Penn State alum as well. So, no, I love the way Krieger plays and how she carries herself. And, you know, it's, I'm glad to be on the same team as her again and kind of learn from her and bounce things off of her. And, like I said before, hopefully get, that final piece of, NWSL championship.
Now with the international break coming to an end, you might actually have other people to practice with this week. I know it's been a little bit sparse. How important has it been to have had the, you know, these international replacement players, you know, there so that you can work on some things, you know, in a group setting?
Yeah. You know, the girls that we've brought in have been, you know, top notch. They're working their tails off, doing absolutely everything that we are asking them to do. And the coaching staff is asking them to do. So the credit goes to them for just kind of grinding it out. I know it hasn't been fun at times, but, you know, we really wouldn't be able to practice without those players. And I think for them to get a little taste of the professional environment and how, you know, each training is a dogfight, I think that that'll just make them better players, as well as they're making us better players by, you know, bringing some youth and some grit that, you know, sometimes at the professional level, you forget what it's like coming right out of college to be hungry and go after something. So, you know, all those girls, you know, from UCF and USF and all those girls are just doing a great job. Yeah, so I probably missed the college in there, but we really appreciate everything they're doing, because without them, we wouldn't be able to prepare for teams like Portland or, you know, previous teams and, that we've played so far.
Now, I'm going to step way out here from soccer just for a minute, because you and I are both from Maryland. And
okay.
Yeah, I'm from Bel Air. So, so my question that's kind of out there, because you just mentioned taste, you know, and so what I'm really curious about is, do you have a can of Old Bay in your cabinet?
I do. Actually, my family would probably disown me if I didn't.
Exactly right. Okay. I didn't want to miss the opportunity to ask that question, as silly as it might be. But for anybody who's from Maryland, they're all out there nodding their heads right now with you and I. So, okay, good. Yeah.
If they don't know, now they know.
Now they know.
Yeah, Dave has often tried to tell me he's the Fresh Prince of Bel Air, but I don't think that's true.
but different, right?
Yeah. let me ask you this, Christine. When the team is struggling a little bit at the beginning of the season like this, is it almost better to go on the road where you maybe don't have to be entertaining so much as just technical and you know just focus on the little things and just worry about grinding out a result? Is it almost better to be on the road when the team's form is not quite where you want it?
I think it kind of, you can look at that question a couple of different ways. You know, when you are struggling and you aren't home, you know, the Orlando fans have been so great that they really pick us up to, you know, make that extra tackle or make that, you know, diving header or that last run that, mm-hmm. you know, our legs are gassed. So, we love playing in front of our fans. But you know, like I said before, the season is so early and we have so many players who, are still figuring out how to play with each other. So ideally it is not the best to struggle at any moment in time, but mm-hmm. it is the way the game goes. But hopefully, you know, we've had an extra week of practice to, again, get all on the same page and work towards the same goal and understand what Tom and Connor are pushing us towards. So, you know, I think we're looking – each day we're looking a little bit better, and I think that's most important. Because this league is so cutthroat, but on any given day, any team can be anyone at any place.
Now, you mentioned that, you know, you guys are all trying to move in one direction as a team. Obviously, there's team goals, I'm sure, revolving around playoffs and maybe further. What I'm really interested in, though, is any personal goals. Now, I understand that your personal goals are going to line up with the team goals, but what, in either a way that you want to develop your game or, you know, some sort of, you know, growth that you want to see out of yourself, what are you hoping for this season?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I think that I'm always on board with what the team does, but obviously this season, I'm going to try to focus a little bit more on my performance. And, you know, in Seattle, I think I struggled a bit mentally and physically all year. So I think for everyone, I just want to prove to myself that last year's just a fluke and just kind of get the ball rolling in the right direction again. And with that being said, I just want to, you know, mentally be engaged for 90 minutes. And what that means is just, you know, if I make a mistake, get over it. You know, soccer's a fast sport. And if you're dwelling on your mistakes, you're never going to play a perfect game. So there's no sense of really dwelling on mistakes. But I would love to get on the score sheet. I would love to get some assists. And, you know, it doesn't have to be my name on the assist board. But, you know, if we're scoring as a team and I'm, you know, helping the team in that regard, that's a check in my book. And, you know, I just want to help the team in any way that I can. And, you know, whether that's playing 90 minutes or, you know, being a spark off the bench, whatever the team really needs me to do, I'm happy to do it. But the goal of the team and myself is nothing less than an NWSL championship.
Now, Christine, when, you know, the NWSL preseason being what it is, only getting a few games in, how long does it take your body and, you know, just anybody in general's body to get into 90-minute match fitness? Because you can definitely see around the league, not just Pride games, but all games, you can definitely see those legs start to go away about 65 minutes into these early games.
Yeah. So you kind of see both sides. So you see players who have continued to play in the off season, which I've done down in Australia for a couple of years with Victory. And you come back and, you know, the legs are tired because you have been going for so long and you haven't really gotten that big of a break. And then you have players who have taken a little bit of time off and they're reaching for that match fitness. I think that, you know, you can run on the treadmill all you want, you can train all you want, but until you're in a real match, I think that it's very hard to recreate that in training and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So I would say probably about a quarter into the season, you'll start to see the fitness really ramp up again. But like I said, it's just, you know, we're all getting on the same page and, you know, getting to that match fitness.
Now, like you said, it's early in the season. How difficult is it traveling across the country, literally all the way across the country, to, you know, play one of the better teams in the league?
Yeah, Portland's such a great city for us to go to, and it's such a soccer specific city, which I think is really cool and rare and original in this country. So they're doing something right out there in Portland, and I think that women's soccer is slowly trying to recreate that around the country. But if we got to fly across the country, you just got to take it on the chin and, you know, prepare your body. And we've already been preparing, you know, 10 days ago. So, you know, you just got to know what makes you tick and know what makes you perform and do that. And, you know, that's why they call us professionals, because we should know by now how our body's going to react. So hopefully on game day, all engines will be firing.
Well, one thing we know is that Portland won't be without their coach like we originally thought. Welcome to Orlando. This is the kind of thing that happens to Orlando teams, is suspensions mysteriously get reduced right before we go in and play and that kind of thing. Before we let you go, though, I wanted to just see if you were, you know, how much you paid attention to the international games, in particular the U.S. women's national team, and how excited are you to see Alex Morgan get into that kind of form that she showed in these last two friendlies against Mexico?
Yeah, no, she's been on fire. So, all of us watch it and we support those girls 110%. You know, all we ask is for her to continue that when mm-hmm. she comes back. You know, that'd be great. You know, I don't think we're asking too much, but no, Alex has been working, you know, extremely hard. You know, when she's come back, she's coming right back into training. Same with Ashlyn, getting right back into training because they believe in this club and representing this club and pushing this club to the next level. So we are hoping that, you know, the goal streak keeps going. I mean, against her old club, I mean, can't write a better script than that.
And certainly the men's team had to inspire you guys over the weekend.
Exactly. That game was wild. I was exhausted after watching it.
So, I think we all were.
Yeah, those of us with weak hearts are not ready for any more of those.
Yeah.
Well, Christine Nairn, it's been so much fun talking to you. Really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the Mainland Podcast, and we wish you the best of luck throughout the season.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, all right. We want to thank Christine Nairn for being with us on the podcast this week. A big thanks to Jackie Maynard for setting that up, from the Pride Communications staff. My voice is just absolutely gone, but we're going to try to fight through it and go get some mailbag questions answered. Dave, Dave, why don't you tell them this week how they can ask us anything?
Absolutely. Obviously, you can tweet at us, ask at AskTMLPC. You can reach us on Twitter at The Mainland. You can also reach out to us personally at Mainland Michael and at Deve, DeveRohe. Of course, you can reach us on the website or at our Gmail account. It should be, and correct me if I'm wrong, themainland@gmail.com.
Yep.
And yay, go me.
Yeah.
And you can, that the Gmail, that's the slow way of doing it, but if you really want to. Of course, you can also reach us on Facebook, The Mainland on Facebook as well.
Yeah, it's not that slow. It's still electronic. It still goes right to us. I will say this, though. You did mess up. It's hashtag AskTMLPC. Hashtag AskTMLPC.
See, that's why he's in charge and I'm not, guys.
So let's go with our hashtag questions first on Twitter, and David wants to know, our set pieces gave us a lot of quality chances this week. What is the biggest reason we were so effective? Dave, you have any theories on this?
We have a lot of guys that can deliver the ball in effectively, and then once we do, we've actually got some big guys that can get up and, you know, get ahead on it and create some space. Those are two simple pieces for any set piece that you would want. It's important to, you know, have somebody like a Coleman or Justin Merriman that can get the ball up and in. And then, like, say, once you do that, you got to have some guys that can finish. And having, you know, somebody taller like a Sanye or, you know, even a Sutter occasionally, even though he's not maybe as tall as Sanye, there's still that creates those opportunities. I think it's pretty simple.
Yeah, to me, it's really comes down to David, the delivery from Yoshi Yotun, the delivery from Sasha Kleshchen, and even Dom Dwyer, when he took one, he didn't miss by much on a ball that was deflected. So some good guys to take these free kicks, and I think that the quality there has been, you know, mostly quite good. I think there's been a few that haven't been very good, and Yotun's been, has left a few that were didn't beat the first defender, and it kind of led to some counters. But I think for the most part, these two, you'll see more of theirs will be dangerous than won't be, I think, moving forward. So thanks for the question through Twitter. We also had a question from Sean. Sean says, how do you think the league views the quality of pros officiating? Does league-sponsored content like Instant Replay suggest that they might not be satisfied with it? Sean, I'm going to take that first and just say there's one reason you're getting an Instant Replay, and that's because clicks, 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 clicks. That's why. Controversy breeds clicks, and that's what the MLS website wants, and that's why you get it. I don't know that they view the quality of it as great. I don't know what they can do about it, but that's a great question for maybe somebody like Don Garber, although he will never give you a straight answer.
No, certainly not. It'll be pro is, you know, who we work with, and that's the way it is. I agree. I don't think that the VAR is a an indication that they're not happy with the referee, and they may not be happy with the referee, but I don't think that having the VAR is a result of that. I think it's
let me interrupt you, David. He's saying Instant Replay, which is the feature on MLSsoccer.com, which is where they talk about the controversial calls. Yes,
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. That's, like you said, clicks, clicks, clicks. That's, you know, that's to get those guys on TV have to have something to talk about. So, you know, if they don't have that, well, then, gosh, you know, they got to protect their phony baloney jobs, as they said in the Mel Brooks movie. So.
All right. Thanks for the question, Sean. Cameron wants to know, after the change this past weekend, what do you make of our formation when Uri Rossell is good to go? And who does he replace in the starting 11? Also, who finds the net more this year, Pino or Mueller? So let's start with the first question there. And I'm going to say that it seems pretty obvious that when Rossell comes back, he will step in for Will Johnson. That's my take. Is that how you read the situation?
Yeah, I do. I think the other part of that question is, I think he may have been referring to, you know, going back to a 4-4-2 diamond, which will make so many people upset. However, I think after this past week with him, you know, switching formations, I think what we might see is we'll probably still see the diamond mostly, but he may look at those types of teams where it makes sense and switch the formation up. Hopefully, you know, that's what I hope. That would be what a smart coach would do. And, you know, so I do think that that's what'll happen. As far as Uri coming in, yes, I think once Uri is able to get on the field, Uri will be starting. As good as Will has played or as hard as he has hustled, you don't bring in somebody like Rossell to sit him on the bench. So, especially because, you know, Johnson is so he's good at playing other parts of the, you know, field. So if you have him on the bench, he's a guy you can bring in multiple positions if you need it. So, I mean, you know, I don't want to degrade him by saying he's a utility player, because I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, having that type of Swiss Army knife type of guy that can go out there and do multiple things for you is a good and necessary position or player to have on your team. So, but to answer the question, yeah, once Uri's back, Uri will be out there.
Yeah, utility players are very, very necessary with the roster size, and I think that Will does afford a lot of flexibility, and a few other players do as well. But, yes, Rossell looks like he'll step in for Johnson. I don't even think it matters which formation you go with. I think whether it's 4-4-2 or 4-2-3-1. And I do think that, you know, we had Miles Joseph on our show, and I know that Jason Christ has said the same thing. We want to play multiple formations. If the players are getting all of their assignments down, they'll be able to do that. So I think we've seen some hiccups in the 4-2-3-1, which is maybe why it wasn't being played earlier in the season. So, you know, it's hard to say. So that's a good question. And then who scores more goals, Pino or Mueller? Who do you think, Dave?
Ooh, you know, my heart wants to say Mueller, but my head's going to say Pino. I just think, you know, on some of the, despite what happened on the one set piece this time, I think, you know, his size is going to give him a little bit more opportunity inside the box here and there. So I'm going to say Pino, but I'm hoping that Mueller proves me wrong just from the amount of, you know, gumption and engine and whatever else that he's got, and passion and fire.
Yeah, and I think Pino also has, you know, he's proven at a professional level, albeit not in the top flight, that he's a good finisher. So, really, for me, it comes down to who gets more playing time. So, whoever earns the most playing time will probably win that battle. So, that's kind of a cop-out, maybe, but that's my answer. So, thank you for the questions, Cameron. Let's see, what else do we have? I know we've got at least one more set of questions through the email, but I'm also going to look up the my favorites here just to see, because I sometimes will favorite a question, because sometimes it's not marked as an Ask TML PC question. So let me look at my likes.
And while you do that, we did get we got a question mid-match. I don't know if you saw that on Twitter. I was unable to, or it might have been pregame, but I was unable to answer it at the time because I was writing, but I think I was writing something about if we thought that we had a chance to win or not. And, you know, obviously we did. I think, you know, the other thing is we gave our predictions, and once again, as always, we were wrong.
Here's a question from Tom. Tom would like to know, can the Cardiac Cats start playing in the first half? That's my question for the podcast. Also, on a serious note, do we have too many facilitators? There were many pass chances that could have been shots until Mueller came in. I think we've kind of addressed this a little bit. I thought that the Cardiac Cats did not fail to play in the first half. They failed to finish in the first half.
Agreed.
So that's, I think that, yes, I think they're certainly emphasizing that. And as for the other thing about too many facilitators, no, I just think it's chemistry. I think we've talked about it all preseason, is when these guys get on the field, they're all healthy, they've all had some minutes together, they'll start to figure out where each other likes to go, where they like the ball, and all of that kind of thing. And also, not just the passer, but also the runner. Where does the passer feel most comfortable getting the ball? You know, do they want me to make that run inside? Do they want a diagonal run? Do they want a straight run? Do they want me to go toward the corner or toward the end line? You know, these are all things that will get mapped out, you know, and I'm looking forward to when that starts to happen. So, so thank you, Tom, for the question. That's all the ones I've seen on Twitter, Dave. But I do have one through the email inbox.
Alrighty.
It comes to us from mainland.com commenter Andujar. Wants to know, first of all, that was a hilarious yellow on Blanco for refusing to back up what amounted to about a foot on the Orlando court. Was it earned for his actions or refusing to back up, or was it more for what he said, or was this pro-proing? I think to me that looked like he turned around and said something to Toledo and gave him a dismissive wave to show him up, and I think anytime you do that, you're risking a yellow card. I think that's what the problem was. It looked to me like the Lions were asking for 10 yards, not thinking Blanco was giving 10 yards, and, you know, sometimes that's what happens. It's like maybe they were going to take that corner short, and, you know, here's Blanco not giving them 10 yards, that kind of thing. So I don't know. I think it certainly was for something he said.
Oh yeah, no, it was for something he said. There's no doubt in my mind about that. You know, because him just not, you know, backing up quick enough or something, that's not going to do it. It had to be, he had to make some sort of snarky comment that, you know, and like you said, make a dismissive gesture. And so that point, yeah, the ref's going to pull that card because they don't play like that. Whether they're pro or not, they don't play like that. So I certainly don't think it was, you know, pro gonna pro. Now, don't get me wrong, pro gonna pro, but pro didn't pro in that spot.
Right,
so.
And then the indicator to me was that he didn't immediately pull the yellow until Blanco turned around and kind of gave him a dismissive wave and said something, and because he was just backing up away from the player, and then he's like, oh, so you got something else to say? Well, here's your yellow card. Enjoy this.
And, exactly.
And I don't think he did enjoy it because he almost got sent off a few minutes later. Okay, and Andujar also wants to know, do you have any insight on Lindley and Larea being out of the 18? Could we see more loans like Roaches to USL for these guys if the first choice team is healthy? And I think you definitely hit the nail on the head with the second part of your question. It's pretty certain that if they can get these guys minutes with everybody healthy, they're going to get them minutes. In fact, Tony Rocha went the full 90, I think, his first game with St. Louis, and he came within a clearance off the line by a defender to opening his account with St. Louis. So, we'll probably see some more loans, but I don't think Lindley and Larea was anything more than guys being healthy that have not been healthy, being in the lineup, and Pino finally getting back in and all that. So I think that's certainly what played into them not being in the 18, and of course it will – it will also come down to what does Jason think he needs more of. If he was playing a 4-2-3-1 like he was, probably wanted to get an extra defensive midfielder in there. So we did see Higuita in the lineup. So that's what I think. Dave, you have anything to add on that?
No, just expounding. There's a bunch of factors that are going to go into that as to, you know, who makes 18, and it's going to change from game to game, you know, as like you say, formations and also just matchups. Uh-huh. You know, what happens there. So, you know, we will see other loans, and that's a good thing. You know, as far as who goes when, who knows?
Yeah, and I think it might do Lindley some good to get some games at the USL level. You know, he certainly looks like he's got some talent and he can be a useful MLS player, but he's learning a new position to play at the next level because he doesn't quite have the pace to be the attacking midfield. So, you know, if he's going to if he's going to project as a defensive midfielder, he's probably going to have to learn on the job, and you want them to do that, you know, at the next level down probably. So we could see something like that soon. I think there's a lot of USL teams would be glad to have him, actually. So
no, I'm certain of it.
All right. Thank you for asking the Mainland Podcast anything. We appreciate it. I did check the iTunes reviews, Dave, and we have two new iTunes 5-star reviews, but they didn't leave comments. They just gave the 5 stars and went on their merry way. So that's fine too.
Yeah, we'd still appreciate it. It still helps out. But, you know, if you do say something, then we'll Michael, when his voice isn't horrible, we'll read it out. And you'll get a little bit more recognition for that great 5-star review.
That never happens. My voice is always horrible. It just happens to be more horrible than usual today. Anyway, write to us, themainland@gmail.com. We do have a new email address coming soon, but I don't have any idea when that's going to start, so I'm not going to put that out there in the universe just yet. And you can hit us up on Twitter. We are @TheMainland. Just use the hashtag AskTMLPC, and that's how you do it. And you don't have to ask us about soccer, but you're certainly more than welcome to do that. All right, Dave, before my poor throat just completely disintegrates, what's your key matchup and your prediction for Orlando City going to the Philadelphia Union this week?
All right. Key matchup is going to be what we can do against CJ Sapong and keeping him in check. So it's gonna be the defense, which I think has been playing good. So I'm pretty hopeful. But when you've got Akam and Sapong in there, it's goals can happen. Even though so far this year for Philadelphia, they really haven't had much success. The last time we went up there, it was not pretty. I certainly expect a better result this time. Given that we've got everybody back and I think defense is playing pretty good, I'm going to say it's a 1-1 draw in Philly.
All right. The matchup for me, one of the matchups is of course going to be Dwyer against Blake, because Blake is a very good goalkeeper. He's played well against Orlando. That's one to watch. But the midfield against midfield matchup to me is very, very important. You've got Akam and Fafa-Picot in that midfield for Philadelphia in the attacking midfield, and very good defensive midfield of Madunyanin and Bedoya to deal with on the other end with your attackers against their defensive midfielders. So how Coleman and Kleshchen and Merrim deal with Madunyanin and Bedoya, and certainly how maybe Rossell, but probably maybe one more game of Johnson and Yotun deal with Picot and Dockel and Akam. That's very important as well. Sapong certainly has given us grief. Akam has given us grief, but on that outside, that left side, it's certainly going to be a lot of stress on Will Johnson and Scott Sutter or RJ Allen, whoever plays right back. So that's going to be the key to me is midfield versus midfield.
Okay. Your score prediction?
I'm going to go 2-2. I think your 1-1 was probably what I would have taken, but since you said it, I'm going to go with 2-2 just to be different. Because road games are notoriously difficult to win, and people are like right now, grumble, excuses. But the numbers don't lie on road games in MLS. It's ridiculous. Nope. Compared to most other leagues, not soccer leagues, but any sports leagues. It's just incredible how tough it is to win in this league on the road. So.
Ask Portland.
Portland's going home 0-2-3 from their 5-game road trip to start the year. So, Orlando hasn't been great on the road, but I think that they probably feel pretty good about themselves after winning 2 in a row. So, they just need something to break their way early, and they could win that game against a Philadelphia team that's played 4 times as opposed to 5. They're just 1-1-2. They're 1-0-2 at home, though, so they do have a tendency to grind out results at Talon Energy Stadium. So it's not going to be easy. It's going to be, we've seen pro-ing up there before.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of thing. So I'm going to just say a draw would be a great result early in the season on the road, and if they could get that point on the road, every point on the road is just huge. So that's what I think can happen. But I do think if they get one or two breaks early in the game, they could actually go on and win that game, you know, comfortably. I don't know if that's actually possible for an Orlando City team to win a game comfortably, but it would really be nice to see them get some early love from the soccer gods. So that's what I say. I don't know who your goal scorers are going to be. It's probably going to be somebody you don't even expect.
Probably.
But
I want it to be Mueller, but you know.
I really want Merrem to finally score a goal. That's what I want.
Oh, true. So, yeah, true. Okay.
If Merrem can get one, or if Coleman can get one with his foot, or one that he actually means to shoot, that would be pretty exciting. So there you have it. Those are our key matchups and predictions. And as I told everybody in the press box Sunday, when it got to 2-2, there's no way it's going to end this way, because that's what I predicted.
Exactly.
So do not run off to Vegas with these predictions. We would not advise that at all. Dave, I'm done. I am absolutely toast. We're going to come back next week. We're going to talk about Orlando City at Philadelphia Union. We're going to talk about the Pride at the Portland Thorns. I don't know. We'll probably have other things to talk about. We'll talk about the upcoming games as well. And, you know.
And, of course, you know, we'll have the hashtag AskTMLPC questions and anything else that you guys want to get in here. And hopefully Michael will be a little bit better by then. You know.
Please, God.
Yeah.
get your questions in. Ask the Mainland Podcast at hashtag AskTMLPC on Twitter. We are at the Mainland. And you can email us themainland@gmail.com. Give us a 5-star review and leave us some comments on iTunes. We'll read those on the air. Please read our stuff at themainland.com. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. And spread the word about us to your friends and family and all those who love the beautiful game as much as we do. That will do it. I'm toast. I will sign off on behalf of David Rowe. I am Michael Citro, saying go City and go Pride.